Good evening and welcome to Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. Tonight we continue our semi-regular series we've been doing lately, visiting different colleges and universities in mid-Missouri. Today we take a trip about 90 minutes up the road to Kirksville and visit Truman State University. We'll talk with the school president, Troy Pano, about what makes Truman a great place to teach and to learn. And we'll meet a professor with a unique tie to the school's history who is teaching education and training the next generation of teachers for our schools. Get your purple on for a visit to the beautiful campus of Truman State University tonight. Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. Hi, and welcome to Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. I'm Darren Helwetch. On tonight's show, we head to the northeast part of the state to visit Truman State University. It has a very interesting academic mission, a lovely campus in Kirksville, and a lot of people very enthusiastic about what's happening there at Truman. We're going to meet a couple of those folks tonight, including Professor Julie Lockbaum. She teaches education at the school and has some great historical ties to the university as well. She's the daughter of Jack Magruder, who for decades was at the school as a student, an instructor, an administrator, eventually serving as president and president emeritus at the school. Professor Lockbaum continues that tradition proudly, and we'll hear her Truman story later. First, we sit down in McLean Hall in the president's office under the gaze of a large portrait of the school namesake, Harry Truman, and meet Truman State University President Troy Pano. It's Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. We are in a series where we're visiting some of the different colleges and universities around our region. And this week we are in Kirksville, Missouri, at what was once the District 1 Normal School for the state of Missouri and is now Truman State University. And we're visiting with President Troy Pano, and it is wonderful to have you on the show, sir. Thank you for inviting us up.
Thank you. Very happy to have you here with us.
I want to start with just the most basic of questions. Tell me about your school and what's special here at Truman.
Sure. Well, I'm very proud to be the president at Truman State University. Of course, it's gone through different iterations. As you mentioned, it's almost 150 years old now. It was founded in 1867 as the state's first normal school, ultimately evolving into a regional comprehensive university with the name of Northeast Missouri State University, and there are probably still a lot of listeners out here who associate this school with that name.
Right.
But in the mid-1990s, the legislature passed a bill to rename it to Truman State University, and that new name was really to align with the new mission that it had received in the mid-1980s when Governor Ashcroft was in the governor's office. And that bill was passed in 1985 to make then Northeast Missouri State University the state's public liberal arts and sciences university. So one thing that a lot of people don't realize is that Truman is one of the few schools that actually has a statewide mission by statute. So we moved from being a regional comprehensive university to a statewide institution in the mid-1980s. And we really reflect that mission because we have students up here in Kirksville from every corner of the state, every county. And we have, since that mission change, I think, been able to gain a lot of distinction for the state. It was back at a time when down in Jefferson City there was a feeling that we needed to have different missions. There was too much redundancy in the institutions of higher learning. And so as a part of that movement, that's why we were created around this mission of a liberal arts and sciences school. And with that, in the 1990s, we really evolved to becoming the state's only public, highly selective institution. So we have the academic profile of our student body is very strong. We are noted, of course, in a lot of publications for our commitment to academic excellence, and certainly a lot of that is our ability to attract some of the best and brightest that certainly this state has to offer. And so we're certainly very proud of that. Also have a lot of distinctions, academic distinctions, in terms of what our students are able to do, the number of Fulbrights our students get, the number of Peace Corps volunteers that we produce, et cetera, et cetera.
I want to go back to a couple of things. First of all, you mentioned highly selective, and tell me what that means.
That means back in the 1990s, the Department of Higher Education created different categories for the public universities. Everything from open admission all the way to moderately selective to selective to highly selective, and we're the only highly selective institution, and it's really based on a combination of the incoming classes, high school GPA, and their average ACT score. And so that's really what that was about. Again, it was really part of a movement to try and distinguish institutions, to show that there are institutions serving different missions within the state. So not only are we the state's public liberal arts and sciences university, but we also are an institution that is here for academically prepared students. That doesn't mean all of our students are valedictorians or, you know, bright flight scholars with 33 ACTs. We have a lot of diamonds in the rough here that we look at other things. We really take a very holistic approach when we admit students here. We look to see what they've been able to accomplish in their life, not only in the classroom, but also outside the classroom through their service and leadership activities. But what we're here for is really to attract students who are academically prepared. So we do not have any remedial education, for example, at Truman State University, whereas maybe an open access institution, an open enrollment institution, would have a considerable amount of remedial attention to make sure the students could become college ready in math and English and the like. We don't do that. We assume when a student comes here, we certainly will give them tutoring and advising and that sort of support, but in terms of remedial classes, we don't offer that. We expect them to be college ready and be able to do college level courses when they get here.
Dr. Troy Pano, president of Truman State University, our guest. And then I want to talk to you about being a liberal arts and sciences institution, and particularly liberal arts. I work on a campus. I've spent most of my life in one form or fashion on a campus. I know the way things are going in higher education. Everybody's getting an MBA now. Everything's about, you know, how am I going to get that $65,000 a year job in the corner office and all of that jazz. Talk to me about why it's important to teach liberal arts and why that's still, why there's still an importance to have a school with that particular mission in the state of Missouri.
Well, I actually heard a piece on your very station this morning talking about the value of liberal arts education and that it actually might be the best preparatory for a 21st century job, because we're really in a day and age where that we cannot predict what the workforce is going to look 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now. And I think the focus of every institution, but particularly a liberal arts institution, should be on developing students who are going to be adaptable, who are going to be critical thinkers, who are going to be creative, who are going to be problem solvers, to provide them the tools and the skills to be successful and adaptive. And I think that's what a liberal arts education is about. Here we really talk about the three pillars of liberal arts education that we think certainly stand the test of time and probably even more relevant today than ever before. And the first is to instill the intrinsic value of learning. And that's important because we expect our graduates to be lifelong learners, and if you haven't fallen in love with learning for learning's sake, you're going to have problems in life as different challenges face you and different jobs face you. You're going to have to learn, you're going to adapt, and you're going to have intellectual curiosity to learn more about the world and the job that you're assigned. Number two would certainly be a focus on the higher order thinking skills or cognitive development, and I mentioned some of those already, things like critical thinking skills, but also qualitative and quantitative reasoning, the ability to communicate effectively, to work with people from different perspectives, to have that kind of cultural competency where you understand the world in a very broad sense. And how culture and history really influence who people are and how they think about the world. All of these are the type of higher order thinking skills that I think are going to empower people to be successful in the 21st century and in a global economy. And then the last pillar would be character development. Thinking about not only what you're doing inside the classroom, but outside the classroom, to find your purpose in life, to make sure that we are focused on moral development just as much as intellectual development, that we are going to produce good citizens, that we are a public university, and our highest calling above all else is to produce good citizens for our democracy who are going to be engaged in their community, who are going to serve fellow men, and are going to be able to be leaders in our society.
Teaching in that way, as opposed to very straightforward practical job skills. This is how you build a car. This is how you sew a dress. That's complicated stuff. Tell me about the teaching here and specifically about your faculty, because what you just described would require
some buy-in from the faculty in order to accomplish a pretty complicated set of goals.
Yeah, I think we've been very intentional in the kind of faculty we hire here. This dates back to the mission change and Dr. McLean, who is still a resident down in Columbia, who was the president at that time, really kind of set the tone that you try to attract people who care deeply about the mission of this institution and working with students, not only as teachers, but as scholars and advisors and mentors. So we really expect our faculty to be involved in our students' lives. And one way of being able to do that is certainly to look at those faculty members' experiences before they ever get here. And one of the questions I always ask, Dr. McLean actually started this tradition at Truman, and that is the president interviews every candidate for every faculty position. And one of the questions I ask every faculty member is, who was a mentor in your life and how did they influence you? And if they found their path or their passion as a result of someone else who inspired them, it gives me a good sense that they are going to have a similar effect on someone else, that they get it, that they understand how a faculty member, how a teacher can influence and inspire someone. So those are the kind of faculty we look for who are really engaged. That's the thing that they find, a sense of purpose, not only the commitment to their discipline, which is important, not only the commitment to their scholarship with important, but above all else, their commitment to their students, that they really care deeply about their students, not only their intellectual development, but also their social development as well. So I think that's what makes this place special, is that it is a residential experience where students come here and they live and they learn together and from each other.
You talked about mentors, and I'm always interested in talking with people in positions like yours. I've met very few six-year-olds in my life that said they wanted to be a university president. Yeah. Talk to me about your path and kind of how you've ended up where you are.
Yeah, well, it certainly wasn't intentional because I was like that six-year-old. I thought, I probably at 6 years old thought I'd be a Major League Baseball player, just like a lot of six-year-olds. I really was inspired by a faculty member. I went off to college and I didn't have a clue as to what I wanted to be. I don't know if I even knew what I wanted to be after I took this American history class, but I do know what that professor did to me. He opened up the world. All of a sudden, I started thinking about the world in ways I'd never thought before, and it excited me. And all of a sudden, he sparked an intellectual curiosity in me that really carried over throughout my life. So I know the impact that a professor can have. I still didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but I was kind of the stereotypical liberal arts kid. I went through college taking classes merely because I was curious and I was interested in the subject matter, or I heard that this faculty member was great. And so I ended up kind of backing into history, philosophy, and English, two majors and a minor. And I think most, that's probably every parent's nightmare, right, is for their son to come back after their first year of school and say, hey, Mom and Dad, guess what I'm majoring in? History and philosophy, right? But for me, it transformed who I was. And I didn't know what I wanted to do with it, but I just knew that I now loved learning. Ultimately, I went to law school, and I practiced law for about 3 years, but it wasn't for me, and what I wanted to do was to recreate and to live that experience I had as an undergrad, where I was inspired by a faculty member and really where I really started thinking about the world in a different way. So I decided to go back and pursue my PhD at Michigan State University in American Studies, and I became a faculty member up at a university in Minnesota. And I thought that's what I would do for the rest of my life. And I kind of, as I think a lot of administrators will tell you, is that they never planned on being an administrator. As you said, you don't kind of tell people, oh, I hope I'm going to be a higher ed administrator someday. But it was just really by some people, some other mentors who saw something in me and the potential in leadership, who asked me to apply for a dean's job when a dean's job opened up there. Long story short, I got it. And then it was a search consultant, actually, who called me one day about the vice president for academic affairs job down here at Truman State University. And it's an interesting story. I wasn't on the job market, but the reason why I was inspired to come down here in that role or to apply for that job is because I'd heard so much about Truman's mission. And that public liberal arts and sciences mission is what inspired me. It combined two things that I felt passionate about: my own liberal arts experience, but that it was a liberal arts experience to serve the public good. And so that was compelling. But that's why I applied for the job here at Truman. I got the job. 2 years later, I became president of the university.
Dr. Troy Painow, our guest. We are at Truman State University in Kirksville. It's Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. I'm Darren Helwedge. There's obviously a lot of what happens and what makes a university unique is the environment. Tell me about Kirksville and kind of how the university and the community work together.
Yeah, you know, we have a wonderful working relationship. We don't have a lot of the town and gown issues that I think people commonly associate college towns with. The community is very supportive, and it's really a laboratory. It's a learning laboratory for our students, and I think those in the community will talk about how important it is to have the students up here engaged in the community, both in terms of working in it, but also serving and learning in it. For me, sometimes people say, Kirksville, it's a small town, there's not much to do. To me, it's a perfect place to go and get your college education. It's not overwhelming, there's not a lot of distraction, but it's large enough for the students to come here and take leadership roles in the community and really kind of own this town in many respects. And if you come down here, especially in the evening, you'll get a sense of that, especially on campus, is that the students really rule this place in many respects. It's a safe place for them to come and start really getting involved both on campus and the community, leadership roles and the like. And so to me, I think Kirksville is just an extension of the campus and the learning environment that we have here at Truman State University.
I want to close up with a question. You mentioned having studied history, graduate studies in American studies. You could name anything in Missouri after Harry Truman, and people are going to go, yeah, right on, great idea, Harry Truman, he's great, we love him. And I've been to the Truman Museum and studied some myself. Because of your own educational background, I want to ask you about Harry Truman and what about him, what about what he believed in or how he did things maybe kind of inspires this school beyond just it's a cool sounding name.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, it's kind of ironic that it's named after Harry Truman. Of course, he's the only president that hails from the state of Missouri, so as you said, it makes sense to have a university named in his honor. But he doesn't have formal higher education in his background. But if you read the speeches of Harry Truman, if you read the history of Harry Truman, you understand how important education was to him. And in some respects, he's a perfect person for this school to be named after, because I think what he represented more than anything was a love of learning, not necessarily the certifications that go along with learning, but learning for learning's sake and the importance of that. And so I think in that respect, I think not only because he's from Missouri and it makes sense, but I think he embodied the values of a public liberal arts and sciences university that values learning above all else.
That curiosity about things, intellectual curiosity.
Yes, exactly.
Things. Well, we look forward to learning more about the school, visiting with some of the other folks here, but we do appreciate your time an awful lot. Dr. Troy Painow, again, the president of Truman State University. Thank you a lot for the time. Wonderful to talk with you.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
All right, it's Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. We're in Kirksville this week visiting with folks at Truman State University. Our next guest is a professor of education here at Truman, Julie Lochbaum. And Julie, thank you for taking the time to visit with us.
Thank you.
This school, I mentioned with Dr. Painow, known many years ago as the District 1 Normal School. For people not familiar with that term, it started as a college for teachers, a college of education to train the teachers in the state of Missouri. And just tell me a little bit about how much that is still a part of what Truman does.
Well, it still lives on over here in the education department. And one thing I think it's important to understand about Truman as the District 1 Normal School, if we're going to use our historical title, is that we were founded by Joseph Baldwin, who was active in the teacher education in the normal school forms in the eastern states, particularly in Pennsylvania. And he came west immediately after the Civil War with the idea of doing something different in normal schools. He was trying to set a new model, and what he wanted to do, it later became labeled as the Missouri idea. Okay?
Yeah.
So he was trying to say, no, don't just go to normal school because you finished the one-room eighth grade schoolhouse experience and you want to keep learning and you know you're going to have to be a teacher. No, don't just go to normal school only to learn how to teach. No, don't just go to normal school to keep going in education because that's the only school that's accessible to you. No, the Missouri idea is that learning how to teach while learning what to teach is essential. That was his word, Joseph Baldwin said, I must regard as essential. Okay? So in the, we like to think in the MAE, the initial certification at the master's level, mm-hmm. which is the education program that Truman retains to this day, that we are actually following Joseph Baldwin's idea that students will learn how to teach while they are learning their content, what they will be teaching.
So, for example, a math teacher is learning math.
Learning math.
And not just learning education.
Right. Not just learning how to teach, but also learning the math at the same time. And we do that by having some certification courses seated in a student's undergraduate degree.
Mm-hmm.
While they're aiming to do the one-year, full 12-month, one-year master's degree after they earn their bachelor's degree to earn their certification and
licensure. So rather than coming in and being a sophomore, junior, senior, majoring in education, they will be studying science, studying math, mm-hmm. studying their subject matter, then they come in and take the education courses on the graduate level for the most part.
A little bit,
okay.
but remember, we're trying to be true to Joseph Baldwin's idea that you learn how to teach while
okay.
learning what to teach. So it's not enough to just stick it on at the end, you know, like an appendix
right.
or something, you know. There must be some attention paid to learning how
okay.
to teach while you are learning that content, but we do require the content degree on the bachelor's level.
This is a little unusual, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes,
talk to me about how you're seeing it work, because I know as part of the a graduate school, getting people ready to go into the workplace, placement, finding jobs, you're going to have a pretty good feel for how that's going. I imagine that this is something that the people who are hiring the young people that come out of here as teachers are going to have strong opinions on.
Well, we've had a very good record of our graduates being hired. One of our faculty did a study a few years ago, and disproportionately, our graduates seem to stay in teaching for 15 years or longer. That's an important statistic because there's so much churn in the teacher corps at
mm-hmm.
this point in United States history. The Carnegie Commission has done a number of studies over several decades showing that the teacher pipeline is actually so leaky that were other professions to have the same level of attrition, they would be up in arms.
Sure.
If you lost that percentage of your physicians, or if you lost that percentage of your attorneys, or if you lost that percentage of your ministers, there would be a hue and cry, what can we do to keep people in these professions? But in fact, this year, the 2014-2015 school year, is the year that 51% of the teachers in the United States have one or fewer years' experience.
Mm-hmm.
That means 51% of the 7.2 million classrooms in the United States are being filled with a teacher that is a first-year teacher. So the finding that our faculty member had with our graduate cohort, that they were staying in teaching for 15 years or, you know, longer, that's a significant finding when you can prepare people who will stay
yeah.
in a profession.
Well, it sounds like a remarkable program. Julie Lochbaum with us, a professor of education at Truman State University. And beyond your teaching here, you were a student here, but you have mm-hmm. some other ties to the history of the school as well. Your father was a lot of things at Truman, including
yes,
the president.
Yes, he was a faculty member, and of course, all my growing up years, that's what he was. He served as the dean of the science division. He served as the title we now have for provost of vice president of academic
mm-hmm.
affairs, and he served as the 13th president of Truman. His name is Jack Magruder.
That's it's an interesting decision. On the one hand, one can understand why it would be very attractive. On the other, I can see how that's a commitment to kind of follow in those footsteps, to not only go into teaching and being involved in education, but to do so here.
Yes. When I was a student here, I was a philosophy and religion major because I was pretty convinced there'd be no way to end up as a teacher if you were a philosophy and religion major.
Surprise!
Yeah, you kind of make your way back no matter what. And we have jokes in the family. We have some younger family members now who are saying, I don't want to be a teacher. Everybody in my family's a teacher. And, you know, at Thanksgiving dinner, Easter dinner, the rest of us, we just all say, well, good luck with that.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably destined.
You're echoing a lot of the things that I heard from Dr. Pano. For one thing, talking about the intellectual curiosity, and
yeah.
It sounds like you came from that world. So it's maybe not as crazy, to go into teaching after studying religion and philosophy
as it initially said. It was a good background.
But he talked about small classes and the 16-to-1 student ratio, and I know that's undergrad, but still. You're going to get an opportunity at a smaller school like this, relatively speaking, smaller school, to work a lot individually with students. And
yes.
Most really great teachers, that's what it's all about, man.
Yeah, it's what makes you energetic enough at 11 o'clock at night to come back at 8 the next morning and do it again, you know. Yeah, and I would like to say that one thing we've been able to hold on to so far in the education program, coming back home
yes.
to my little corner here, we don't farm out supervision of student teaching and things like that to adjuncts. That all that mentoring and supervising is done by our faculty.
Great.
And that is something to think about, I think, when you're choosing a program or looking at schools.
Julie Lockbaum, Professor of Education at Truman State University, we thank you so much for your time, and good luck with the program. Sounds like you got some great stuff going on here.
Thank you.
And that is our program for this evening, Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. Our thanks to our guest, Professor Julie Lockbaum, and President Troy Pato from Truman State University. We also want to give a big thanks for all her help to University Public Relations Director Heidi Templeton, who spent quite a bit of time helping us put the show together, walking me around the campus, and introducing me to everybody. So thanks to Heidi. We also thank Kristen Kennedy and the Truman President's Office. Remember, you can follow Thinking Out Loud on social media. We are on Twitter and also on Facebook. Just look for KBIA Thinking, and you can hear past programs in our series at our website, kbia.org. Just click on Programs for Thinking Out Loud. Tonight's show was produced by Shelby Mann of the Missouri School of Journalism. Our associate producer is Trevor Harris. Be sure to tune in next Tuesday evening for another Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. Till then, I'm Darren Hellwedge. Have a great evening.